Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes. So happy you're hanging out with me on this December evening or on a Saturday morning in December. Either way, it is the month of December. And I talked about this week's show having Mick Higley from By the Numbers on the show. Mick's been on before, but he is a person I lean on for a lot of the statistical data that I share on the show. But right at the last minute, he had to pull the plug on me. So we've upgraded, and we have Doug Hughes, the co-author of Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, in studio live with me. So we're going to have a great show. Got a lot to talk about, a lot of information, very practical stuff, including some year-end ideas as well. Also, we're going to talk later on about taming healthcare costs in retirement, and also on a fun note, some predictions that were made back in 2015, early 2015. What surprises did we have? What really came true? What didn't come true? That's always fun to look back on that. We're going to do some news of the week. First, brought to you by Bloomington Affordable Storage. Reclaim the clutter areas of your home with help from Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. It's over on 17th Street, newly remodeled, with 24-hour on-site management, offering pickup and truck delivery and truck rental. Call about their now winter special. They finally switched it over at 812-339-4221. That's Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. You know, we've been talking about the Affordable Health Care Act and Obamacare and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, it's kind of on life support, according to the Financial Times. First, you know, back they argued that we had too many uninsured people in the United States. The estimates range from about 30 million to 45 million. Second, the rise in health care costs, they said, required an intervention that would bend the curve downward on cost. And then third, they claimed that the insurance companies were making way too much profit and basically shortened consumers on care, while those that had more Cadillac plans drove up utilization rates and costs for everyone. Well, what we're seeing so far is that in 2014, premiums spiked, and then in 2015, they kind of exploded again. But not just that, but deductibles were so high that many people decided just to not go with insurance at all. So, and also half of the co-ops collapsed this past year, most of them this fall, and many insurance companies are just simply pulling out of the market because healthy people haven't been signing up. So that's going to be a big talking point, I'm sure, as the presidential debates continue throughout the next calendar year. Speaking of presidential people, I thought this was really funny. Of course, from Yahoo Finance, there's no way to know exactly how Americans will vote for the 2016 elections, but one university says they have a perfect record when it comes to predicting presidential outcomes. Our neighbors over at Western Illinois University, Doug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just over the border.
Just over the border. I don't know what their mascot is. I forget, but if my good friend Steve Birch was here beside me, he could tell me in a heartbeat. They may be the Cowboys.
Could be.
Is that the Cowboys? No, I don't know. Mountaineers? No, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But they have a great record, evidently, of picking presidents since 1975. So this isn't like just a one-and-done deal. And it got so they got some ideas about who might be our next year's president. According to the university's mock election, Doug, the 45th president of the United States will be Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders.
My prediction is this is the year they will be wrong. If you think about this field, it's a lot of fun to talk about. And I mean, it's starting to get serious now. But Bernie, I mean, I think he's a self-proclaimed socialist, right?
He is, yeah.
And
he,
then you have Clinton, who's being investigated by the FBI, and you have Trump, who's a nut. So it's pretty interesting.
It's political theater probably at its finest.
We don't get very political on this show, but I do want to say during the Christmas party this year, our office Christmas party, I gave you a stock certificate, a vintage stock certificate from the Trump Casino and Resorts that went belly up back in 2004. I read a little description about the bankruptcy. I told people here on the air that I would buy you one. I bought you one, framed.
Yes, you did.
We even put it at the top from the Donald.
Yeah.
And I think you'll be hanging that in your office soon, I hope.
Absolutely. It was funny.
That was a funny thing.
It was a great gift. Very thoughtful. Very creative. I love it.
Well, and I talked about on the gift-giving show that I'm going to buy Doug Hughes one of these. And you heard at church and on the street,
everyone was saying, David Hayes has this Christmas gift for you, but nobody would tell me what
it was. told you. I appreciate everyone listening to keep that under wraps.
I thought it was a new car or something yeah. like that, but it turned out to be a worthless. Let's make it a worthless stock certificate.
It was very worthless. But what was interesting was...
very valuable to me.
The guy's name that was on there was like Jason Keller or something, mm-hmm. but the stock certificate was actually issued on
my
your,
birthday, yeah.
Which I thought was just by chance. That was pretty cool. Here's one more piece out of Investment News written by our good friend Mary Beth Franklin. She's talking about Medicare surcharge letters might dampen your holiday spirits. There's a new Grinch-stealing holiday cheer, and her name is Irma. No, that's not Irma like a woman. That's short for income-related monthly adjustment amounts, which is the government lingo for higher Medicare premiums that some people are going to pay next year if their retirement incomes exceeded a certain level. The Social Security Administration started sending out letters in late November. I had a client walk in with one just today to retirees affected by next year's premium surcharges because their incomes on their 2014 returns topped either $85,000 if you were single or $170,000 if you're married. So let me give you a little background on this. Most Medicare beneficiaries pay a base premium of $104.90 per month back in, or for 2015. Of course, if you're a couple, you're going to pay twice that much. But if your modified adjusted gross income, which includes adjusted gross income plus tax-exempt interest, plus half your Social Security, that's what MAGI is, you're going to pay more. So premiums for both Medicare Part B, which cover doctor visits and outpatient services, and Medicare Part D, which covers prescription drug costs, are all based on this five-tier income bracket system. So if your modified adjusted gross income exceeds an income bracket by just $1, you're going to be catapulted into that next tier, and you're going to pay a higher surcharge. So new people enrolled in Medicare in 2016 or those on Medicare not taking Social Security, they're actually going to pay $121. But here's the thing. If your income is over those thresholds, you could pay as much as $243 a month, $316 a month, or even more. So that $104 only represents about 20-25% of the actual premium cost. So you sell a piece of property, your income went up, bam, you're going to have that higher premium. It will roll off the next year. You took a large distribution from your retirement account, and it caused you to go over the limit. That's what happened with my client. They had retired in 2014, had worked the majority of the year, pretty good salary, got a little bit of a severance pay when they left, plus some pension income. Their Social Security had started earlier that year. And then they also took out a distribution from the retirement account to kind of pay off some bills right before retirement. Well, that income pushed them over like $240,000-some. So they're going to be paying $316 each in 2016 for their Medicare Part B and D premium. So that can be what they call in the South a poke in the eye. We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, what happens when or if the Fed actually raises rates next week? Doug Hughes and I are going to talk you through that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. A little wrangling going on here at the studio on who and what is the mascot of the Western Illinois University. And I looked it up, and it's Rocky the Bulldog is the mascot for the Western Illinois University athletic teams. But also they're referred to some nicknames as the Fighting Leathernecks. Doug, we have a few clients. No, I'm just kidding. We should never say that.
Well, and the Leathernecks, it's a military slang for Marines, so it's a compliment.
That makes sense. All right,
that's
Doug, the way we use it. Here we go. What happens when or if the Fed raises rates next week? Now, we've got to be a little sick of hearing about this, right, by now?
Several years now, David, we've heard from everyone coming through our doors, everything we've read, everything we've listened to, economists, portfolio strategists, Fed Reserve chairman, chairwomen, rates are going to rise, And we've all been holding our breath for this rise in interest rates.
And even maybe keeping our money in the bank, waiting for rates to go up.
Yes, keeping money in the bank, waiting, investing around themes for rising interest rates. It just hasn't happened yet.
Well, in honor of the absence of our friend Mick Higley from the show, from his publication By the Numbers, he says in the last rate hike happened back on June 30th of 2004. That was the last time they started a rate tightening cycle, 11 and a half years ago. In the 6 months following the rate hike, the S&P 500 gained 7.2%, and the last time they began this rate tightening cycle, bond yields on the 10-year had actually dropped by 7.6%. So according to By the Numbers, that's what's happened. Now, let me tell you this. I think this time could be different. I don't think it's more about what they do next week, because I'm pretty sure they're going to raise interest rates, but it's going to be more about what they say. You know, we've all been, like I said, sick and tired of hearing about this for whatever it feels like, whether or not they're going to do this or not. And we're talking about a quarter point rise if they do. Now, the reason I think this time's a little bit different, the markets could have a little larger response to a rate hike. That is, because they're not used to these one and dones, which I think could happen. You know, they raise the rates once and they just kind of sit on their hands for a long time. The Fed's going in one direction or another most of the time that they've tightened or loosened. So all of these statistics, Doug, that come from someone like Mick, these are in normal times, not right. Maybe abnormal times, which we could very well be facing.
You know, it was interesting. I was listening to a portfolio manager speak the other day, and he was talking about interest rates and kind of along the lines of what Mick is talking about. We may not want things to get back to what we know is normal. It kind of be a little bit different this time going around. And that's why you remember some of the great asset managers out there termed a new phrase called the new normal. What does the new normal look like? And it's a very tough to navigate prediction. And so, therefore, you must remain widely diversified and aware of what could the ramifications
Absolutely.
Could be.
Well, so the real, I guess, answer is that the Fed finally does raise rates a whopping 0.25%, and that's just the overnight borrowing between banks. It could be the last rate hike for a long time, because we have, of course, an aging population who's saving money and paying down debts, and that's not just here, but it's around the world, especially in Europe and Japan. There may not be much of a debate on the matter. They may just have to sit on their hands, because just think, I mean, even Japan, they've fallen back into a recession after the strongest quantitative easing effort ever. I mean, they've had low interest rates, actually zero interest rates, for 20 years. And, of course, Europe is kind of floundering around, and China and emerging economies, they continue to be pretty slow. Retail sales are kind of weakening here in the U.S., again, because of our demographics. And top that off with the escalating geopolitical events and tensions that we all face, you know, there's a chance that, you know, the Fed may hold off at the very last minute. I mean, I don't think they will, but it certainly could happen. Right, Doug?
Absolutely. And, you know, we've just talked about it so many times in the radio program, and we've really assumed so much about it that what we have learned is we just really don't know.
We don't know. And here's the thing. Around the world, we're talking about raising rates from 0 to 0.25. What about negative interest rates?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Danish companies around the world, they actually are paying taxes early to get rid of cash. At one small Swiss bank, according to the Wall Street Journal, bank customer deposits actually shrink by 0.8% per year because of negative interest rates. Now, some Danish folks with floating rate mortgages are actually, Doug, discovering that their banks are paying them each month to borrow the money instead of actually charging
sign
them interest.
Me up.
Yeah, sign me up for that deal. Instead of charging them interest on their loans. Now, that could be create a bubble in the housing market, and that's something that they're all concerned about. So such is the life, as the Wall Street Journal said, of the upside-down world of negative interest rates, in which banks impose a levy on customers to hold their money instead of paying interest on deposits. I mean, the ECB, the European Central Bank, just last week pushed rates down on deposits. It pays commercial banks to a minus 0.3 from a minus 0.2. And I think three of the Eurozone's smaller neighbors, Denmark, Sweden, and Switzerland, I believe all three of those have pushed their interest rates deeper into negative territory in response to the ECB's rate cuts. So, Doug, this is a pretty interesting time. I mean, here we are
exactly.
Tightening, supposedly, and over there, I mean, loosening. I mean, I remember studying economics, and I don't remember negative interest rates actually even being in a textbook. I mean, zero was zero.
And so we're looking at policymakers, and we're looking at people who are forecasting over their specific regional economies and mm-hmm. what they assume is going to happen. We're looking at banks who are in the business to make money. And, you know, they borrow, they lend, they do all their things, but it really is brand new set of C's in front of us here, and so it's going to take some sharp navigation.
I just think it's funny because, you know, if it helps to move rates from 1% to 0.5% and 0.5% to zero, why not to negative 5.5%? You know, in theory, negative rates at a central bank should trickle down to consumers or businesses by mm-hmm. encouraging lending. I mean, that kind of makes sense. But it also makes cash sort of a stimulative hot potato. I mean, everyone should want to use it, right? but there could be some unintended consequences like hoarding of cash and things like that. And really, so far, according again to the Wall Street Journal, the record's been a little patchy on this negative interest rate thing. I mean, bank lending in the Eurozone has only risen just a little bit. That's not, you know, inflation's not really returned. Prices, I think, just rose like 0.1% back in November. Sweden also, too, has been stuck with inflation near zero. So negative interest rates may not be the answer because I just don't think you can create demand. You know, looking back at the United States as an example in Japan, as people age, and this is what's happening, they don't necessarily want to go out and borrow money. I mean, do you want to? I mean, if you're 55, 56 years old, is the first thing in your mind to go out and borrow a bunch of money? No, it's, you're focused on paying those debts down, not borrowing more. So, Doug, we're going to take a break. We've run over a little bit, but in the next segment, we're going to talk a little bit about is investing and taking a lot of risk really, really worth it? And we're going to give you a couple scenarios here to sort of think about, put that in perspective. And then also, when you get to the point where you need to withdraw money from your accounts to live off of, how important is the sequence of the returns in the market, in the fixed income area to you? It's very, very important. We'll come back to that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Congratulations, everybody, for hanging in there with us. Doug Hughes is with me tonight for the big show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Of course, Doug is the co-author of our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. It's a resource for adults ages 50 and older. So if you'd like to pick it up, you can head over to Amazon. We did a big book giveaway for the last several weeks. And I'm sure that if you ask nicely, we might be able to give you one more book. We got to have a limited supply.
It's
got to
be nice, though.
It's got to be very nice emails. So if you'd like one, we'll do this for the very last time, this show only. You can email us at cfci.us. Just contact us. Sorry, I got choked on something. Contact us. Say, I'd like to copy your book. We'll make sure we get it to you. And I hope you enjoy it. And then once you're done, pass it along. Because our goal is really just to get the book out and get it into hands and get people reading it and talking about it. So we appreciate that very, very much. Hey, we were talking about low interest rates. You know, again, going back to interest rates maybe going up 0.25%, that's the interest rate between banks borrowing from each other overnight. It probably won't affect your CD rates very much, if at all. If you're lucky, you might see a half of 1%. Like a 0.005% increase, very, very small, if any. But don't wait to put your money to work because interest rates could continue to stay low for a long time. The longer you wait, the more you have to make up for the lost time. Does that make sense? It's the lost opportunity cost. I ran an example that compared investing in a five-year investment-grade bond at 3.05%. And then compared that to someone who said, hey, all right, I'm going to wait for rates to go up before I put my money to work. And they're only earning 0.15% in a money market account. Well, here's how the math works. So the first year I have $100,000. I earn 0.15%. That equals $150, folks, on $100,000 in my money market account. If I have it in a five-year bond earning 3.05%, I earn $3,050 the first year. The second year, rates would have to go up on a four-year bond to 3.8% for you to end up earning the same amount of money on that five-year bond you bought a year before. If you go 2 years by your $100,000, you've only earned $300. Well, I'm up $6,000 on you. I mean, I've got $6,000. You have $300. I mean, I'm up big on you. So now you have to make 5% for the next 3 years to even make the same amount that I made by putting my money to work now. So my point is, if you're sitting there thinking, you know what, if they're going to start raising rates, then I'm going to wait because I think I'm going to get a better deal later. The lost opportunity cost on not putting that money to work right now is insurmountable. You can't get over that hump. So, Doug, a lot of people have fallen into that trap, and they've fallen into the last 7 years, folks. So let's just face it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, David. And waiting, there's a high cost in waiting. And there's a number of different vehicles to improve your situation. But waiting for interest rates to go up, it's just the opportunity cost is greater than you're going to earn by doing, by waiting.
And we're talking about fixed income investments because obviously the equity markets, I mean, you know, who knows whether it's better to wait till next year or invest now.
That's
but
right.
Even the questions that we get all the time is, you know, when's the best time to invest? As well, it's when you have the money is the best time to invest.
Exactly. And, you know, there's an old saying by Ben Graham, who was one of the real founders of value investing. He used to say that you can own a questionable company at a comfortable price, or a comfortable company at a questionable price. And where a lot of people make their mistakes is they look into companies that they think are comfortable. We could go down this list of brand names, yep, but if you buy them at a questionable price, it really doesn't work out in the long run.
To get back on time, we're going to take another quick break. I apologize for that. But when we come back, we're going to talk about investing and taking risk, and is it really worth it? I mean, is having a smaller return consistent over time better than having your money in this wildly variable investment over time? So we're going to give you some comparisons to kind of put that into perspective. Also, some year-end ideas as well. We're going to give you some things to think about here at the end of the year. We don't want to wait until, you know, December 29th to implement some of these things. Just give me a couple of ideas. Some you probably have heard of. Some you might think, huh, I've never heard of that before. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. You know, the holiday season is going to be a little bit spotty with the show. Of course, we'll be here next Thursday for sure and Saturday morning replay. But then the following week would be Christmas Eve. And, of course, I won't be here Christmas Eve. I'll be with my family, and hopefully Jim, the producer, will be as well. And then I believe the following Thursday was that New Year's Eve. So we'll have back-to-back weeks where we won't be on, but we'll make sure that we have something laid out for you to get you by until the start of 2016. So just to kind of prepare for that. And again, folks, you know, this is kind of the last show. We're going to be offering up a free copy of Doug and I's new book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. And all you have to do is just email us at cfci.us. If you have someone that you want to re-gift it to, fine. We don't really care. If you'd like for us to autograph it and put a little message in of encouragement, we'll do that as well. But please just email us at cfci.us, and we'll make sure we get a hot new copy in your hand. You know, one of the questions I used to ask people years and years ago, and a saying in our office is, it worked so well, we quit doing it. That really came true with this. I used to put up on the board and say, hey, let's talk about investment returns. Let's talk about, you know, realistic expectations. So I would put $100,000 at the top of the board, and we're going to say this person has $100,000 to invest. And then I would say to the person, hey, I'm going to write on one side just a steady return every year of 5.6%, and I'm going to do that for 10 years, for 1 year every year for 10 years. Just write down 5.6% all the way down. And then column A is going to be stock market returns. Now, I didn't use any actual returns. I just said to the person, let's make up 10 years of returns, because really, who knows what the returns are going to be over the next 10 years. And I said, and you know, say whatever you want to say, but give me at least a couple negative years in there, because over a 10-year period of time, we're going to have a couple negative years likely. He said, okay, great. So, you know, I would encourage them to start off big. Hey, give me some big numbers, because they would say 7. I don't know, let's go bigger than that. How about 15? They go, okay. And they go, okay, 10. No, let's go bigger. Let's go 16 or 17. And then the next year, okay, let's do 5. And let's go big. And then finally they'd say, all right, let's do a negative. Let's have a big year, negative 17. Then it can bounce back a plus 10, minus 4, plus 17, minus 8, and then plus 10, plus 12. I mean, these sound like pretty good numbers. I mean, plus 50, in 10 years you had a plus 15, plus 16, plus 11, plus 10, plus 17, plus 10, and a plus 12. In 3 negative years of a minus 4, minus 8, and a minus 17. Most people look at that and say, I'll take it all day long. Here's the interesting thing. If you simply go through and do the math on this, under the market idea, your $100,000 grew to $172,089. But a simple 5.6%, and then a 5.6%, and then another boring 5.6% over a 10-year period of time, that $100,000 grew to $172,440, almost exactly. In fact, it was about $300 more than the volatile side. So I used to do this all the time, and people would say, and I'd say, which side do you want? And they would point to the side that showed the consistent returns. I find that to be true with most people, especially people that are approaching or near or certainly in retirement, Doug, because when it comes to retirement, building up to it is one thing, but
that's right,
distributing, having a good distribution model is something different. And these sequence of returns really, really matter.
David, it's so true. And, you know, you can control how your money is invested, and you can even control your withdrawal rate. But what you cannot control is the market's being down. We'd love to think we can, but nobody can predict exactly when the markets are going to be down. So let's talk about some results when it comes to withdrawing money mm-hmm. in this sequence of returns, the difference between you retiring, let's say, rolling your money to an IRA to do the right tax planning. You put the money in and you begin withdrawing your distribution. So if you had $100,000 and you put it in a portfolio and the first 3 years, -9, -12, and -22, David, if you are beginning to take out your 5% with a 3% inflation, when you get down to the bottom, you find out that you run out of money about 20 years into it. And that's just with the three negative years right out of the gate. The flip side is, if you had those positive years the first 3 years, and positive 19, positive 18, positive 22, if you had reversed it, then you have a lump sum at the end. So when this sequence of returns happens is vitally important to when you're doing your planning. Again, you can have the best 60-40 or 65-35 blend. You can have your withdrawal rate figured out. But when that storm of market volatility comes through, it makes a huge difference when you're taking the money.
And a big, big difference. In fact, the literature you have in front of you, when that person ran out of money in 20 years, I mean, the opposite of just reversing the returns, in other words, having the big returns at the beginning and the bad returns at the end versus bad returns at the beginning and good at the end, is like a million-four difference.
Exactly. And the reality of this, when we're looking for between age 41 and 65, you can see that the returns don't really matter one way or the other on the accumulation side.
Right.
But when you get to the distribution side, the difference is if you start at 66 with that -9, -12, -22, you run out of money by the time you're 84. However, if it reverses at age 90, putting the -22, -12, -9, you have $1.8 million.
Yeah, significant.
It's significant.
If you'd like a copy of
difference.
This piece,
yes.
Came from Guardian. I've carried it around for probably 15 years. Once again, it works so well, I quit using it with people. We'll give you a copy of that because it is very, very powerful to show you the difference between investing during the accumulation phase and investing during the distribution phase. It boils down to this. These days, with low rates, uncertainty in the market, you have to have a good income plan. And that requires both. Highly liquid things that you can get your hands on quickly on a monthly basis. It requires some of these investment grade type bonds that we gave you the example of earlier to build out your income over time. Maybe some zero coupon bonds that mature when you need the cash the most. And then obviously some growth. But what I don't like to do is rely on the growth money to buy my groceries next week, next month, next year, or even the next 3 or 4 years. I want my growth money to be out there 10, 15, 20 years before I have to count on it. Then I have the time to go through these volatile times. I don't have to worry so much about it, and I'm not withdrawing from that bucket either. So there's a lot to this. And if you're approaching retirement, if you're 2 or 3 years out, I think that's the time to start building these pools of money. Some people call them buckets. We call them pools. It doesn't really matter. It's all conceptually exactly the same. But put more certainty in your investment strategy, especially when you're on the final stretch heading into retirement. All right, we're going to take another break, Dougie. When we come back, some year-end ideas. I know you shared some of these on the Jim Inman Show, yeah. Which is, of course, the
Friday evening
Bloomington Review, yeah. Right before our show on Saturday morning. So Doug's going to have like a double. You're going to have a double dip of Doug Hughes on Whoa. Saturday morning. That's a lot to take, folks.
Yeah.
And plus, it's a mouthful to say. All right, when we come back, some year-end ideas you want to know, and then later on, if we have time, I hope we do, how to tame some of your health care costs in retirement. And then also, we have to get to this one, predictions that were made for 2015. What were the results? Well, of course, we always have big surprises. We'll share that as well. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Of course, if you miss any of the show, Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock, terrific time to catch it. We're always on WGCLRadio.com. Doug Hughes is with me in the studio, a partner of our firm, Comprehensive Financial, and the co-author of our book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. It's a resource for adults age 50 and older. If you'd like a free copy, that's F-R-E-E, free. That's Doug's favorite prize, free. You can email us at cfci.us. I have an uncle, Tom, who I love dearly. He's a triplet. There's three of them, the mm-hmm. triplet, the Hayes triplets. Many of you guys know them. Like the first set of identical triplets ever born in the county, I mean, on record. So we always give my Uncle Tom a hard time about being cheap. because he'll have a buy one, get one free Arby's coupon or something. He'll say, hey, you want to go to lunch? You go to lunch. You're the one buying. He's the one getting one free. So you just got to watch out for this free stuff. It's not always free, but this is free. CFCI.us, and just said, like a copy of your book. We will get it to you. And this is the last week we're going to be offering this free. It's a $16.41. I have no idea how they came up with that price on Amazon if you go there and buy it yourself. So this is absolutely free. Again, CFCI.us. Hey, Doug, there's a lot of year-end ideas that we wanted to share. You know, earlier in the show, if you heard this, we talked about Medicare surtax charges on folks that have higher incomes in retirement. You pay $104 for your Medicare Part B premiums, but then if you have higher reportable income, you could pay a lot more. I mean, you could pay $200-$400 a month for your Medicare Part B premiums. Now, some of that income that you're getting cannot be avoided. Now, if you have a lot of income, I mean, you're probably grateful for that, but a lot of this income could be diverted or sheltered, and you could reduce your reportable income. Now, how do you do this? Well, there's a couple of investments out there, or there's a couple of products out there in the investment world that you can use. When you talk about reducing reportable income, it's not about shoving it all into tax-free investments, because tax-free income, although it is tax-free, like from bonds, it's still reportable to you. So it goes into the calculation to determine what your Medicare premiums are going to be. So you can put money inside of tax-deferred annuities. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, annuities, you know, they're bad because they're expensive. I mean, there's three types of annuities. There's fixed, which is more like a time deposit at a bank. You have a fixed interest rate and a fixed maturity date. Those don't have a cost similar to what you have at the bank. Two, you have variable annuities, which are a little more expensive, but all the expense typically comes from all these riders that they have, riders for income and death benefits. You can buy a stripped-down, Chevrolet stripped-down model variable annuity, Doug. I mean, these are becoming more and more popular right now.
They're very liquid and, you know, no rebalancing fees, no transaction charges, and they provide a return of premium and death benefit. But at this stage, they have a very wide menu of investment options. And so people want to get into some of the strategies that are more taxable, like some hedge fund type strategies or long shorts, things like that. International, you can really do very well. And people are going to start getting their tax bills for this year.
Yeah, and though,
their mutual funds.
And because it's a tax sheltered investment, it's not reportable to you. And then there's the third one, which is the indexed annuities, which have become very popular. You know, those are tied to the index, but not in the index, and usually have some kind of a floor guarantee. So, you know, there are places like that to put it. Life insurance cash values. There's a lot of life insurance policies that have been designed exactly for this, fully liquid in investment form, provide a death benefit, obviously. Sometimes those also, Doug, have a long-term care rider that's attached to it. So those are some good ways to kind of reduce your reportable income. A little bit late this year, so these are more ideas for 2016. But for 2015, what are things you can do right now? Max out your 401k, 403b plans. You know, you can put, you know, up to $18,000 into a 401k, 403b plan. That's deferring, you know, for taxes. And if you're over 50, you throw an extra $6,000 in. So that's $24,000. If you're married, you know, that's $48,000 that you could defer. Maybe you haven't maxed that out and you need to. What about 529 college savings plans? This is a good one. You can put money in right up to the end of the year, receive a 20% tax credit on your state tax return. Here's an idea. I had a client in, Doug, this week that said, okay, I have three grandchildren, two are born and one's on the way. I want to open one up for all three of them. So no problem with the ones that are born. They have birth dates. They have Social Security numbers. No problem. The one that's unborn, we don't have a Social Security number for, or we don't know the birth date yet. So the way around that is to open a 529 up as you the owner and you also as the beneficiary. Get your tax credit. Then when the child is born, you switch the beneficiary to the child, new grandchild.
Yeah,
we've used that technique for a long, long time, and you can do that. And again, up to $5,000 of contributions. This great state of Indiana will send you $1,000 back for sure. Doug, what about lost harvesting? I mean, here's the thing. We a lot of people think that the market is up, and it is. I guess I don't think it's up. I think it's about flat. But from by the numbers, 263 of the 500 stocks in the S&P 500 actually decreased in value year to date. Of course, the three worst performing stocks are in the energy sector. There's a lot of capital gain distributions that are likely going to be happening with mutual funds. This is a good time to do some lost harvesting to reset your capital gains. It's a good time to really look at this.
It's a time to be active. It's a time for active management, and it's not just somebody manage a mutual fund. Active management within your portfolio that will provide you those opportunities for tax loss harvesting. It's not something that's new. It's just something people haven't been doing for the last 5 or 6 years because the markets have steadily been going higher.
We had a person, Doug, who had sold a piece of real estate, had about $30,000 of gain they were going to pay. We went through and looked at every single holding that they had and were able to reduce the gain on the real estate gain by using some losses on some stock and was able to reduce it down to $10,000 overall gain. So it doesn't have to be stock to stock. It can be gain to gain. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks have some built-up losses as well, maybe some carry-forward losses. Take gains. Take some gains if you
sure,
have those and
absolutely.
Use up those carry-forward losses. Otherwise, you only, chew off about $3,000 a year. That's no fun. You don't get to use up those things. Here's something that a lot of people just need to know about over and over and over. Did you know if you're in the 15% tax bracket that your qualified dividends and long-term capital gains rate is zero for federal purposes? I know you're thinking, no, yes, it is. It's zero. Trust me on this one. In fact, it's so unknown that when I set people up to do this, when they go see their tax preparer and the tax preparer does their taxes, if they're using a computer, it usually works out fine, like some software program, and they'll question that, like, how is this really possible? Well, if you're married filing a joint return, it's like up to $74,000, $75,000, $76,000, you're still in the 15% tax bracket. Now, how do you get to the $77,000? Well, all of that income that you may have, it could be taxable Social Security, interest and dividends, pensions, it doesn't matter, but then you take off your standard deductions, your personal exemptions, your itemized, whatever, and that boils you down to your taxable income. I think you'll be surprised. Flip over to page 2 of your taxes. It's about a third of the way down. Taxable income column. Look at that. That number, if it's below $77,000, you have that much usage to take gains and not pay any taxes. That's something you need to know about. And if you don't have gains, think about a Roth conversion here at the end of the year. I'm going to convert taxable money to tax-free. Use up that 15% tax bracket one way or another. Doug, a lot of people leave that gift card on the table, and like a lot of gift cards used to be, they expire at the end of the year.
That's right, yeah. And again, it goes right back to actively looking at your portfolio, and that's the job of a good financial advisor. Are they sitting down with you talking about these strategies as it comes in before the year end? Now, some of these people may want to buy and hold these stocks forever, and that's fine, but if there are opportunities, you should take advantage of them.
RMDs, required minimum distributions, don't forget to take those before the end of the year. It's your responsibility. Don't get all wrapped up in the confusion because there is a lot out there. But if you don't take the right amount out, it's a 50% penalty. That's 50%. It's huge. And where a lot of people get caught, especially here in Bloomington, is we have so many people that have money, let's say, in the TIAA CREF plan through IU. Then they have some IRA accounts. Maybe they have some 403Bs elsewhere. They get messed up on what's called the aggregation rules. They think, okay, because I took a distribution from TIA CREF, that satisfies it for everything else. It doesn't. You cannot aggregate qualified retirement plans like that plan at IU with an IRA. You're going to have to take one from the IRA and one from TIA CREF. You can't just take one from one and satisfy the other one. You can aggregate all the balances of your 403Bs together and take it all from TIA CREF. That's not a problem. And you can aggregate all your IRAs and take it from that low-paying one, but you can't aggregate the two. And that'll trip you up. These 5498s that go out at the end of the year or sometime in May and everyone gets confused about that, that's information to the IRS that said, hey, this is how much this guy had in his retirement account. This is how much he was supposed to take from this retirement account. And they're starting to connect the dots on these things. It used to be we didn't have any RMD police out there. Now the connectivity is there. You'll get a notice in the mail. You're going to lose. You're going to pay. Doug, we're going to have to take another break. When we come back, let's talk about some of these predictions that were made in 2015 and what the results were. And were there any big surprises? This comes out of Transamerica. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Surprise, surprise. Jim Inman Jr. stepped into the studio, ladies and gentlemen.
Glad to see you boys.
After shunning me on the gift-giving show, Jim, it's nice to see you.
I know. But an elf bought you dinner last week, so it's a compromise.
We thought that elf was you, but we weren't real sure. Here's the real question. Did the elf tip the waitress? Because Doug and I were really up in the air about that, so
yes.
We went ahead and tipped her again.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The waitress was well
taken care of, I'm sure.
Yes, good for her. That's
well,
right.
Absolutely.
Of course, that was on Jim's happy birthday dinner a couple Wednesdays ago. Or
last week,
Wednesday. I'm losing track of time,
It's
Jim.
Okay.
You're 40. I'm going to be 46.
But you don't look it. You look 45.
Thank you, Peter. You see that commercial?
No.
You've got to see the commercials. It's
okay.
Peter Pan that flies in and says, "Oh, Marge, it's you. You don't look a day over 70." And she, you know, it was like a 1965 gathering of people. Thank you, Jim, for that. How old does Hughes look?
I think Hughes is looking like 43, 42, maybe. I think he's between you and I.
Yeah, he is between you and I.
I don't remember exactly, so. Yeah.
Well, that is my age, yeah.
Doug,
I was hoping for a 38.
Hey,
I don't know where
my age just got blasted out,
Jim.
So everybody else gets the same.
Well, I was going to say, you're taking it easy on me.
Jim, we were going to go over predictions that were made for 2015 and what the results really were.
Okay.
My prediction was that you would turn 40, and I was absolutely right.
You were absolutely right.
Man, I couldn't have been wrong about that one. But some of the other predictions that occurred last year at the beginning of the year, oil was around $50 a barrel, and the predictions across the board were that oil would be around $70 by the end of this year. And, Doug, I think they missed that one by a big one.
They did. And, boy, the impact of a prediction being wrong.
Yeah, big time. Ooh. And then we look at the Bloomberg weighing in on GDP, and we had BNY Mellon about U.S. growth and GDP. I mean, pretty much all of them were wrong. What no one saw coming, of course, was the oil prices, the rise in global terror attacks. Volkswagen caught a massive emission cheating scandal, which that one's still unfolding, the Syrian and European migration crisis, the slew of twists in the U.S. presidential race. Did you probably missed this, Jim, but News and Views.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Western University in Illinois.
Okay.
Western University has correctly picked who is going to be the president since 1975. Pretty good track record.
Very good.
They think Bernie Sanders is going to be president. So I'm predicting in 2016 that this is the first time Western Illinois University will be wrong. And then we kind of joked, let's really think about this. We have Bernie, who's a self-proclaimed socialist. You have Mrs. Clinton, who's being investigated by the FBI. And you have Trump, who's a nut. I mean, this is pretty interesting time. So we're going to have a pretty interesting 2016. And, you know, we've never talked politics.
No.
I mean, we kind of stay away from all that kind of stuff. But you got to sit back and enjoy this. But it's starting to get a little bit serious now.
And it is the next president of the United States. I mean, that's not is Obama staying in office?
Yeah.
This is what it is.
Did you know I bought Hughes the Trump Casino and Resorts vintage defunct stock certificate?
No, I hadn't heard.
For Christmas, you're going to have to
see it.
It is
sweet.
We needed to invite you to our Christmas party. We had a mock sort of award ceremony.
Yes.
And we gave out so many funny awards, like Rod's Award, I Wish I Would Have Married Raymond James Instead of My Wife Kelly Award. Folks, we hope you have a great rest of the week. We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.